Amen. This morning we're going to do something a little bit different, and I would really like it if you had one of these half sheets. And if you don't, would you raise your hand and a couple people will bring one to you? So you should have a bulletin and then this other sheet that says the seven I am statements. If you raise your hand, if you don't have one, and they'll get one to you. So yes, we had a little glitch this morning in the video, so please take a look at everything that's going on in the next few weeks in your bulletin and be prepared for that. I'm excited about next Sunday night. We like to celebrate these endings of these groups, although some may not be ending. We have home groups, which are kind of our bread and butter kind of groups, and those go on and on and on. Other kinds of groups go for a period of time, like discipleship groups and life without God groups go for a year or two. So we're celebrating those, and the celebration is part of the group's experience. So next Sunday night, we're going to have a special speaker. His name is Kai Nielsen. He's one of the best speakers I've heard in the last couple of years. He's going to come and deliver a message on Sunday morning as well. So really looking forward to that. Please sign up as soon as you can, because, you know, we need to call Babe's Chicken and say, here's how many dinners we need. And we need to do that pretty quick. So sign up as soon as you can online. So what we wanted to do this morning, we've been studying the Gospel of John for 6 months. And the way we thought we would sum this up and conclude things is by meditating and praying about and thinking about who Jesus is in our lives. And he has given us these images. I love that about him. 7 times in the Gospel of John, Jesus says, I am something. And these are all printed on your sheet here. So what we're going to do is walk through these one at a time. I'm not going to reteach those passages so much as kind of remind us of what's in there. And the purpose of this is for us to spend an extended amount of time thinking about what Jesus means to me. And as we go through these 7, here's my question for you. Which of these aspects of Jesus means the most to you in your life right now, and why? And let me encourage you to think about that, to thank him for that. And if you're in a small group today or tomorrow or this week, I'd encourage you to share which one of these means the most to you in your life right now, and why. We did this with a couple of our groups, our elders and our staff this week, and it was really a pretty cool time to do this. And as I walk through these, I'm just going to speak for a few minutes about each one, and then I'm going to give you about a minute to just think, to just pray, to just say whatever you want to God, or to write some notes down, all right? So you can do that right on your sheet there. Jesus exegetes the Father. What does that mean? It's a fancy word that means to bring out the meaning. When someone gets up here to teach the Bible, we're supposed to exegete it, which means we're supposed to take the text and bring out the true meaning. And it says in John chapter 1, no one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God, is in closest relationship with the Father. He has made him known. Now, that's the word exegete. Jesus made the Father known. The Father's invisible. Jesus shows up. He's equal to the Father, and he shows us what God is like. And he gives us these images, the bread, the light, the gate, and so on. And the way he does it is he refers, in a sense, back to Exodus 3, the burning bush, when Moses encounters God, and God sends him on a mission. He says, Who shall I say sent me? And God says, tell them, I am sent you. That's my personal name, I am. So several times in the book of John, this phrase, ego eimi, it means I am. Jesus is quoting the Old Testament name for God, and he's using that of himself. And so we're going to look at 7 of these images that he gives us. And then at the end of every one of them, I've written Selah. Now, I don't know if you know what that means. Scholars are divided on exactly what it means, but in a sense, it means stop and think. It occurs 71 times in the book of Psalms, and it also occurs in Habakkuk chapter 3. One person said this, when we see that word Selah in a psalm, we should pause to carefully weigh the meaning of what we have just read. lifting up our hearts in praise to God for his great truths. Like in Psalm 66, it says, all the earth bows down to you. They sing praise to you. They sing praise to your name, Selah. So I'll walk through this and then I'll say, Selah. I say, let's just take a moment to ask ourselves, how is Jesus being this in my life right now? All right? Let me pray as we begin this. And then at the end of this, we're going to be celebrating communion together. So it's one big worship experience. Let's pray. Jesus, we find it hard to express all that you mean to us. The more we get to know you, the bigger you get. We can't wrap our minds around everything that you are, but everything that we learn about you is better and better. You're good. You're majestic. You're powerful. And you've used your power and your strength and your majesty to humble yourself and come to live this life, to show us what life on earth should look like in a broken world. And then you took our place. It's stunning to us that you would do that. And so we pause just to meditate, to thank you, to pray in response to who you are. Amen. So chapter 6 of John, it's a pastoral setting. It's out in the countryside. There's green grass. It's peaceful. And Jesus has just fed about 10,000 people. They're sitting around. They got plenty of bread. And he says, you know what I am? I am the bread of life. I'm the bread of life. Jesus declared, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Remember just a couple chapters before, he had met this woman whose life was an absolute train wreck, right? The woman at the well. Everything's gone wrong. She's had all these husbands. Now she's living with a guy. They're not even married. It's like, do you have any hope at all? And Jesus says, I can give you living water. And she's going, well, I would love that. And here he says, I'm the bread of life. I'm the satisfier of those deep longings. We all have these really deep longings down inside. We want significance. We want security. You know, it's an interesting thing to do in a group setting sometime. If you're really pretty close to each other, you go around and you ask this question and say, what do you really want? And the first time you go around, everybody says, well, I really want a new car. I really want a new house. Right, you know, that computer thing, that's amazing. Or the new phone. Everybody goes around. But then you ask it again. And say, well, what do you really want? And if it's a safe place, often people go, you know, I don't really care about that phone, but I'd really like to stop arguing with my spouse. That'd be nice. That's what I'd really want. And you go around and around, and then finally you go around again and go, what do you really want? And people will say, well, I really wish I just knew if there was a purpose for me to be alive. You know, what do we really want? A friend posted this on Facebook. Somebody wrote this, and I would substitute for great men. I would say men in general, or men and women in general. But they said, I suspect that all great men have at one time or another sat on the edge of the bed alone and wondered if anything they ever did really mattered. Maybe you can resonate with that. We have this deep longing for meaning, for relationship, for impact, for substance in our lives. And I love what C.S. Lewis said. He said, if I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. So we have this emptiness in our lives, and we go through all these things to try to find what will fill that, and often the thing we pursue doesn't fulfill it. And Jesus says, I'm the bread. I'm the living water you've been looking for. I'm the satisfier. I made you. You're only going to be satisfied in me. What does it mean to you in your life right now? Let's take a moment and think about this. Selah. Again, you can meditate, pray, write something down. Let's fast forward a few chapters in the book of John, and now you're not in a pastoral setting anymore. You're in a busy, tension-filled city of Jerusalem. You're near the temple, and they're in this festival called the Festival of Lights, and they've been lighting candles everywhere. And in the midst of this festival, Jesus stands up and offers himself to anyone who hears. He says, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." So Jesus is the dispeller of darkness. He's the one that helps us to see. We're in this broken world. We don't understand life. It's like we're blind leading the blind, right? Walking around in darkness, stumbling, trying to figure things out. I love Psalm 119, verse 105 says, "Thy word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." Of course, a lot of these images come from the Old Testament. You know, Jesus says, "I'm the bread of life." They would remember that God sent bread from heaven, right? Called manna. And then Jesus says, I'm the bread from heaven. And when they were following God in the wilderness, there was a cloud by day and a fire by night trying to light their way. And Jesus says, "I'm the light of the world." He wants to help us in this dark, broken world to find our way. I'm reading this book, which I figured I should read because it's been a bestseller for a couple of years now. And don't tell me the ending because I'm only halfway through. I tend to do this. I tend to get halfway through and kind of stall out. But it's a great book. It's called All the Light We Cannot See. And it's a fantastic fiction book. Guy's a great writer. And he's writing about these two kids that are like middle school age. Werner, who's German, and Marie, who's French. And they don't know each other, but they're growing up, and they're about that age. And Marie, her dad is this amazing locksmith, and he's in charge of all the locks in this museum in Paris. And he's fascinating, but he really loves her. And when she's about 8 or 10, she starts losing her eyesight. Until finally she's blind, can't see a thing. And her father loves her, and he knows it's a chaotic time. They have to move from Paris to a town on the coast called Saint-Malo. And I'm trying to pronounce these French words, and it's difficult because I don't know French. But they move because Paris is being bombed, so they have to walk all the way to the coast. And they get there, as Saint-Malo is this town that's a fortress-like city. It's got all these high walls all the way around it. It's right on the ocean. And so what the father does, because he knows, how's she going to live if I'm not around? So he wants to guide her, and the way he chooses to do it is he makes a scale model of the city. And he goes to incredible lengths to make a perfect scale model of the city. And he goes out and measures. He actually gets in trouble because he's measuring buildings and he's trying to figure it all out. And he goes back and he has sandpaper and all these wooden blocks. And he makes every building, every house, every hotel, every street, every wall in this model. And then he carefully guides her hands until she can make her way around it with her fingers. And they go over every street, over and over and over, in every building and every house, until she knows the name of every single thing in that little city. And then they go outside. And he doesn't help her. He says, we're going to go to this place. I want to see if you can do it. She goes, Father, how can I possibly do this? He says, and painstakingly, they take trip after trip after trip. And finally, she's able to go to this place on the other side of the city and come back on her own just by hearing things and knowing that model that he made. And he claps his hands when they get back. It's like, this is a wonderful victory for her. He knows she's in darkness. He wants to make a way for her to be guided in case he's not there. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. I know you're walking in darkness. I know you need help. I know you need answers. What does that mean for you right now? Let's take a moment and think about it. Selah. Chapter 10, Jesus begins to talk about the shepherd and the sheep. They would know all about this. It's an agrarian culture, and they've got sheep everywhere. And he says in chapter 10, I tell you the truth, the man who doesn't enter the sheep pen by the gate but climbs in by some other way is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of his sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. So you would have all these sheep in this pen, and there's only one way in and one way out, and that's this gate. And Jesus says, you want to know how to get into the kingdom? I am the gate. There have been false messiahs and strangers and robbers and thieves that have been acting as if they are the gate, but they're not the gate. I'm the gate. He says, very truly, I tell you, I'm the gate for the sheep. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. He's the entrance into security and fellowship. I've been reading this book. I'm about halfway through. Don't tell me how it ends. It's called The Shepherd's Life, and it's written by a guy named James Rebanks. It's called Modern Dispatches from an Ancient Landscape. He's currently a shepherd in the Lake District of England. And his family has been doing this for generation after generation after generation for hundreds of years. In fact, he gets upset when everybody says, why don't you want to learn something and go out and make something of yourself and go do something else? He goes, what's wrong with this? We've been doing this for centuries. I'm a shepherd. That's my life. And so he describes, you know, them going out and getting the sheep because they go off into these mountains for a season. Then they go out and get all their sheep. And he's got two dogs, Floss and Tan. And this is him describing bringing all these sheep back home. He says, we are nearly home now. The sheep can sense it. Some of the older ewes have threaded ahead. They fan out to graze where the lane opens up by a stream. They're reluctant to cross it, and they pause on its banks. I send Floss past them with a curt command. She nudges through the lambs and past the ewes and jumps the stream. I tell Tan to lie down, and he holds the back door shut. I walk past the flock and open the wooden gate to our land. It's held with a rusting length of barbed wire, twisted tight. I untie it and swing open the gate. The eldest ewes know they are back on our farm, their other home, and they start to jump the stream and thread into the field. 5 minutes, and they're all back on our own land. They find their lambs and head off to graze. Only one way in, one way out. He opens the gate. That's what Jesus says he is. What does that mean to you right now? Let's take a moment. So we just had another grandbaby with us, of course, you know, because we post it like moment by moment on Facebook. And so we just put our daughter and her little baby Emily on the airplane this morning. It's kind of sad. Man, it takes, have you ever tried to raise a kid? Have you ever done that? It's exhausting, right? And she's at that age, you know, we call her Peanut. She's 1.5. She can move around. She can't take care of herself, but she can fly around, you know? And she's just launching herself into things. We were exhausted. There was 3 of us trying to take care of her for a few days. I'm wiped out, you know? There's Cheerios everywhere. They're stuck in my shoe, the whole thing. And Marion, I swear, it was just yesterday, she was that age, right? She's our daughter. How'd she grow up and become a mom? I don't know. It just happens. It's a mystery. And she's a really great mom. She was a really great mom 4 minutes into being a mom. It was weird. It was like we were there and she was like, I just love her so much. And where did that come from? Well, a lot of it came from Darlene. Darlene's a really great mom. She has a very intense love for our kids and she's passed that along to Marion. Marion's passing along to Emily. And I tell you, you love her so much. We took her to the park and these places, and little Emily's at that point where she doesn't know there's anything evil in the world yet, you know? She goes up to this stranger little girl and just wraps her arms around her and just gives her a big hug, you know? She thinks everybody loves her. In this book, The Shepherd's Life, he talks about how he got to be a good shepherd. And some of it came from his dad, some of it came from his grandfather. And I thought, you know, Jesus is God, but he said, you know, I listen to my Father's voice all the time. That's what I do. Everything in life, I listen to my Father's voice. I'm a good shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. And so this guy, James Rebanks, is telling about how his grandfather influenced him. And he said, when my grandfather looks into my face, we share 1,000 unspoken thoughts about the farm and our family. In that moment, I'm not just a grandson. I am the one who carries on his life's work. I'm the thread that goes to the future. He lives in me, his voice, his values, his stories, his farm. These things are carried forwards. I hear his voice in my head when I do work on the farm. It sometimes stops me from doing something foolish, and I pause and I do it how he would have done it. Everyone knows he was a major ingredient in the making of me and that I am the going on of him. Jesus says, I listen to my Father's voice. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. He's not a hired hand. He's not just doing this for a little while. This is his whole life. And he's going to lay his life down. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I will know the Father. It's a close relationship. It's what Psalm 23 says when it says, the Lord is my shepherd. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me. He restores me. He guides me. He protects me. What does that mean in your life right now that he's the good shepherd? Let's take a minute. Mm-hmm. So we live on a terminal planet. Our death rate has been pretty consistent for a long time at right 100%, right? Right at 100%. There's this TV series that just started. I didn't get to see it last week. Maybe you want to watch it and discuss it with your friends. It's called The Story of God. And so they found the guy who sounds the most like God, Morgan Freeman, and he's the narrator, right? And they're going all over the world asking really good questions. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know how it's going to turn out, but they're asking really good questions. And then they have these little blurbs you can see online, and one of them is where they go all over the world to 22 countries, and they say, how is the world going to end? And they ask all these people, and some people are like, I don't want to answer that question. And other people are like, I don't think the world's going to end. And others say, oh, it's going to be fine. The world's going to end, but we'll be fine. I think it'll be good. And others say, it won't be so good. And it's like, we're going to ruin nature. And then some, you know, every once in a while somebody says, well, I think Jesus is in there somewhere. And it's very interesting. It's very interesting to think about what's going to happen. And sometimes it's just an interesting philosophical question, and sometimes it really, really matters. Just a couple weeks ago, we had a funeral in here for a young man named Trey Bomar. He's only 31 years old. And his wife is Christine. She's here still. And I did their wedding 4 years ago. And out of their 4 years, they only had, you know, a few months when one of them didn't have cancer. So he only really realized he was going to die about a week before he did die. And it was a sobering moment, of course. And so the Friday before he died, some of us were in his hospital room, and we were all gathered around. We decided to pray, and he wasn't looking good. He didn't feel good. He was in some pain. He hadn't slept very well. And so we all gathered around. We just prayed. We said, Jesus, you're here. And we talked about the resurrection. And we talked about his life that he has. And we prayed for a while. And I'll never forget, we stopped praying. And I looked up, and Trey had this huge smile on his face. I mean, if you knew him, he smiled a lot. But it was like, what happened? It felt like you were on holy ground, like, Jesus really is here, and he really is doing something. And why does he have this big smile on his face? Because it's true. Jesus is real. He's alive. And he says to his friends, I am the resurrection and the life. In John 11, one of his best friends, Lazarus, got sick and died. And he goes and he sees this guy's sisters, Mary and Martha. And he says to Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. She said, well, I know that my brother will rise at the resurrection, and, you know, sometime in the future. He goes, no, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. He's the reason we have hope in death. What does that mean to you right now? Let's take a moment. Selah. So in John 14, Jesus is at the Last Supper, his last meal with his disciples, and he's talking to them, and I believe it was Thomas said, Jesus, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? Jesus has said, you know the way, and he says, no, I don't know the way. And Jesus said, I am the way. I'm the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. When I was in college, I took a lot of philosophy classes, ancient philosophy, modern philosophy, existentialism, phenomenology. Those are just really big words for we have no clue, okay? Because modern philosophy has kind of given up on the big questions. You know, why are we here? Is there a God? There's a bankruptcy to our thinking. Until God reveals himself to us, we need help from the outside. We don't know where we're going. We don't know the way. Jesus says, I am the way. I'm the truth. I'm the life. You want to come to the Father? Come through me. There's lots of Sundays that I've been through in church, and one of the ones I'll never forget is one we called Power Outage Sunday. And it was in Colorado, and we had done our normal thing of planning a service, you know, the sermon, the music, the electronics, the slides, the whole thing. And we show up, and it's dark. It's like power's out. It's like, what are we going to do? We call off church. Well, we had two big windows, one on either side, which people were always staring out, playing like they were meditating, but they were just looking at Pikes Peak and going to sleep. But anyway, we said, you know what? Let's brainstorm here. So we threw out because we had no electricity. You think about everything we need, you know, you need electricity for everything that we do now, technology. So we said, let's just scrap it all and come. We've got 45 minutes to come up with a whole new service. And so I got together with the student pastor, and he said, well, we just did the thing with the, you know, the prodigal son, and then we can act out the thing. Some of us will be pigs, and others will be, you know, the father and the two sons and all that. So they acted out this whole thing, acted out the whole prodigal son story, you know, about the father that's there and the son that never does anything wrong, the other son that goes and does everything wrong, and then he wants to come back. And so we told that story, and we just said, you know, share whatever you want about your relationship with God, and people did. And finally, I just said, now, does anybody want to come back to the Father? And I'll never forget, it was over on this side, this guy named Jim stood up and he just said, I just got out of prison and I want to come back to the Father. And he became a Christian that day. It just doesn't get any better than that. And we're thinking, why do we need all this electricity, you know? God seems to work without it. We want to know the Father. We want to know the way to go. We want to know the truth. We want life. Have you noticed that the word life is in almost every one of these? No one comes to the Father but through me. I am the way and the truth and the life. What does that mean to you right now? Let's take a minute and think about it. Pray about it. Talk to him about it. Just a little later that evening, as they're walking towards the Garden of Gethsemane, they're passing vineyards, and Jesus says the last of his I am statements. He says, I'm the true vine. You see this vine? See how the grapes are attached? See, that's where the life comes from. I'm the true vine. The vine was a metaphor for the nation of Israel. He says, I'm the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. I'm the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you'll bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. So I remember I'd been in seminary for like, it seemed like decades. It was 4 years, which still seems like a long time. And I married Darlene halfway through seminary. She was really good at typing. And so that was one of the things that was very helpful as we were going through seminary. And you're in there for a long time, it just seems like. And you're not doing ministry. You're thinking about what you're going to do when you get out. So I remember, you know, writing these things down, like coming up with these ideas when I get out. You know, I'm preparing for a lifetime of ministry and whatever that means, and coming up with all kinds of ideas. And I got out finally, thanks to Darlene. And I mean, back then, you know, they didn't have like computers. I'm not kidding. You know, if you made one mistake on a page, they wouldn't even let you use whiteout. Ask your parents what whiteout is, really. It's an amazing thing. You had to retype the whole page. It's astonishing. But anyway, I got out of seminary and I got into the ministry. I started working for this church in Dallas. I went through 1 year and I used up all of my ideas. Half of them didn't work. And I was kind of burned out. I thought, oh my gosh, I've been in for 4 years. I got out for one. I'm already burned out. What am I going to do? You know, and I called a friend of mine named Brian. I said, Brian, help me out here. You know, I'm dying here. I can't get through 1 year, let alone 40. And I said, is there any good books you could recommend? He goes, how about the book of Acts? I mean, not a Bible book, another book, you know, that's really going to help a lot. And he said, the book of Acts is really good. I said, why? He said, because these guys, they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know where they were going. They just followed the Holy Spirit, you know, put one foot in front of the other, and their life became an adventure. And they were, you know, they were drawing their life from Jesus, and that's how they lived. He said, is it possible that maybe you've just kind of been doing your own thing, Steve? I said, well, maybe. Maybe. Maybe I was like working for God, just kind of doing what I thought God might like, instead of changing the paradigm and thinking, you know, really, it's his kingdom. I'm just part of it. I don't have to make the thing go. I just get to use my gifts that he's given me and trust him and hang on to him and draw my life from him. And it became more of an adventure. I like this thing that somebody wrote. They said, at first, I saw God as my observer, my judge, keeping track of the things I did wrong so as to know whether I merited heaven or hell when I die. He was out there sort of like the president. I recognized his picture when I saw it, but I really didn't know him. But later on, when I met Christ, it seemed as though life was like a bike ride. Only it was a tandem bike, and I noticed that Jesus was in the back helping me pedal. I don't know just when it was that he suggested that we change places, but life has not been the same since. I worried and was anxious and asked, "Where are you taking me?" He laughed and he didn't answer, and I started to learn to trust. I forgot my boring life and entered into the adventure. Jesus says, I'm the true vine. Stay connected to me. You'll bear fruit. You try doing it on your own, you can't do anything. What does that mean to you right now? Take just a moment, and then we're going to transition into communion. Encourage you sometime today or this week, share with somebody, I don't know, write a blog about it, post it. Talk about which one of these means the most to you in your life right now and why. We're going to take the bread and the cup, and when we take the bread, we're going to remember that he gave his body for us. Go ahead and take that when you receive it, and when you receive the cup, just hold on to the cup and we'll take that together. All right?